Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. Rav here, as always, your host. How's everyone doing wherever you are in the world? Thank you so much for joining me. I'm recording this Thursday morning here, Melbourne time. Premier League action is back this weekend. Is it just me or did this international break feel longer than usual? It doesn't really make sense because they're all the same length of time. This one seemed to really, really drag on. I'm pretty keen to get stuck back into Arsenal action. And maybe it's more of a byproduct because we ended our run just before the international break in a really, really good spot, a really good position. We had momentum, we had form, we'd won a few consecutive games in a row. We, of course, sitting pretty on top of the table, even at this very, very early stage, of course. I wanted that to continue. I wanted us to bank as many points as possible and just keep that enthusiasm and momentum going. But it is what it is. Conversely, you compare that to the prior international break where we ended on a bit of a sour note. Actually, a very sour note. We lost that match to Liverpool, and we know the narrative that happened since. And I was pretty keen to get stuck back in, and I'm sure the team was as well. They were keen to atone for that loss, but then having to go off in international duty and stuff, it stifles what you're trying to do. But look, it is what it is. I don't mean to make a big thing of it, because before you know it, it's going to be the next international break. There's one due in about 3.5-4 weeks time. I think around the 10th of November. For some reason I have that in my head. That's when the next break happens. So yeah, before you know it, that'll come past, and we'll be in this position again, and hopefully Arsenal are sitting on top of the table then again too. I will most certainly take that deal if offered. But anyway, a few things to talk about. So I'm going to tie in a couple of points to today. I'll do a little international roundup. I've seen even less of these international matches than I saw on my recording over the weekend. Then at least I had some more highlights and stuff to talk to, especially the Arsenal-related players. I could talk to some more specific points there. I've seen a couple of goals, and to be honest, Arsenal are in real goal-scoring form. It's been a pretty good international break overall. Touch wood, of course. I'm not aware at the time of recording of any major injuries to come out of this. I think it looks like most of the players are coming back unscathed and in a clean bill of health. Of course, you don't know until they're back and they've been assessed, and every player, of course, is carrying bumps and bruises, and some of them are traveling from a longer distance than others. I mean, Gabriel and Martinelli, for example, are coming back from Japan, I believe. So that's quite the journey. That's across a number of time zones. It's about 11 or 12-hour flight, from what I understand, from there back into London. So even accounting for all the luxuries that comes with private plane and first-class travel and all those sorts of things, it's still a fair journey, right? So their bodies are going to be in a different state to some of the others. So all of them will be assessed, I'm sure. And you know, Arsenal overall, like we've got options. If someone needs to sit down for the weekend or not ready, and I'll come to this a bit later, our fixture list for the next 3 or 4 weeks, because it's on like Donkey Kong now. There's matches midweek, they're coming in thick and fast. So this big squad that we've built is going to be tested, and this is what we're primed for. This is exactly why Arsenal have done what the business that we did. In the summer, they have built the squad with options, with levels, with depth to manage through these periods of the season. Because if you want to do what we want to do, you have to be able to get stuff done, even accounting for injuries and absences. And we've still got a few players that will come back in late November, such as, I believe that's Madueke's time in as well. Odegaard is being, I don't think it's been officially confirmed by the club, but it's essentially come out from Sammy Mockbell, very reliable reporter, that he's not due back until the end of the November international break that I mentioned before. So I'll try and hone in a little bit on the next sort of four weeks for Arsenal and discuss the outlook regarding what we do. And of course, then Fulham on the weekend. That's the next match, and that's the most important match because it's the next one. Okay, let's get stuck into it all. So Arsenal, we are in good goal-scoring form. Marino scored twice. Again, Mikel Marino. Like, what a run of form he is in. I'll come back to him in a moment. Martinelli scored for Brazil. Eze scored in a substitute appearance for England. Saka scored previously. I think I mentioned that last time. It was a cracking goal from Bukayo. That's him at his best. And if that's a little preview of what we've got to come, then yeah, please bring that on. Trossard scored as well for Belgium. I believe even in the under-21s matches, Max Dowman, this young man just continues to just impress. He's playing under-21s at 15, which it shouldn't surprise because he's playing for the first team at Arsenal. So he's playing against senior men already. You know, he's probably coming across players double his age already. So it's not surprising that he's skipped a few levels. He's not playing under-17, 19s. He's straight into the 21s and he's scored as well. From what I understand, the youngest goal scorer for England at that level. That's just like, it's incredible. Incredible. He's 15 years old. It's mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing to me what he continues to do. And I know Mascara's played some minutes as well. Wanneri, too. So Norgaard has played as well. So we've got a number of players with minutes. Saliba always plays for France, of course. Calafiori, Timber, their workload has continued. I believe they played both matches for the Netherlands and Italy, respectively. So, you know, in one way, you can say this is good. This is good for Arsenal that they're coming through that heavy load. And the other way, I'm just looking at just keeping a little bit of an eye on that because fullback, you know, it's a very commanding position for Arsenal, and we've suffered. Injuries, probably some workload-related injuries in those areas in the last few seasons. It's happened to White before because he had to carry the load for Timber. And if I'm being honest, like has White really truly recovered from that season? You look at the sort of stop-start nature of his career since. Are they related? Is it correlated? I don't know. It could be a coincidence, but it's quite a demanding position for Arsenal. So we just got to watch. Watch those minutes. Calafiori is in sublime form. The stuff that he does, the license he's given. I mean, how do you even profile this guy? Like he's not just a left back. He's not a left centre half. He's a little bit of everything. You look at some of the positions he pops up in. He's where a right winger would be sometimes in that channel on the right side of the box. This guy is just awesome. He's chaos, and it's just. You know, at times Arsenal can do with a little bit of chaos, and it's just great seeing him given that freedom, that license to do what he does, and it's a weapon for Arsenal. So more of that, please. Saliba, of course, plays for France. From what I understand, Hincapié is not too far away. Is there a discussion to be had that in these, but pretty much related to what I've just been talking about, at managing the load fullback? I mean, are we going to see Hincapié just slowly introduced into the team now after that injury he suffered in that small cameo in the Champions League a few weeks back? So it'd be great for him to get stuck in because the minutes are there. I mean, I'll come, you know, I may as well do this now. I'll just bring up my other screen. I may as well get stuck in to the fixture list because I keep referring to it. So this weekend, of course, we are away to Fulham, which is a huge, huge match. It really is. They've caused a lot of trouble for Arsenal. I'll come back to that specifically in a moment. But just to outline what our schedule looks like in the next few weeks, it's Fulham on the weekend, 3:30 a.m. kickoff here Sunday morning. Here we go again for me. I always shudder when I see some of these kickoff times, but I don't want to bore you all with the specifics of that. So then midweek, we are home to Atletico Madrid. I'm really looking forward to that. Like stylistically, that's Simeone versus Arteta. I mean, that's just going to be a great battle to watch. And it's a huge test for Arsenal because we know we need to unlock these stubborn low blocks, and we know the defensive nature of Atletico Madrid. I'm really looking forward to that tie. That's going to be fantastic. Then next weekend, home to Crystal Palace. Again, of course, Arsenal, a lot of trouble. Midweek is the EFL Cup, home to Brighton. It should be a good opportunity then to see some players. I don't want to call them fringe players necessarily. However, some players who do need the minutes and would look at that match, and if they're fit, you'd imagine that they're right in the framework I'm talking about. Of course, Kepa's a given. Norgaard, Wanneri, these sorts of players, they'll be looking at that sort of fixture and thinking, yeah, they're right. They're right in Arteta's thinking. Then that weekend, away to Burnley. Followed by the following week, I'm looking at this now. So this is 5th of November, well, Australian time, it'll be 5th November, away to Slavia Prague in the Champions League. And then we round off away to Sunderland that weekend. That's right before the next international break. We are not then scheduled to play until the North London Derby a fortnight later. So just honing in on these matches, how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 7 matches, 4 of which Premier League matches and two in the Champions League, one in the AFL Cup. Now, at the risk of sounding a bit entitled, right, I would be looking at these four Premier League matches specifically. I'm not discounting the importance of the other matches. However, right now, after the start of the Premier League that Arsenal have had and how well we've done to be on top at this position with that tough opening run, I'd be looking now at this time. We really need to capitalize. We need to capitalize on points here. For me, maybe I'm being too greedy, too selfish, too entitled. I think these are four matches we need to win. If you want to lift the Premier League, you absolutely need to go to Burnley and Sunderland and win those matches. With absolute respect to them, of course. There's no easy match in the Premier League. It's not like it once was when I first started watching Arsenal very, very closely in the mid-90s. It is not what it once was. And we need to be capitalizing on those fixtures. Looking at Fulham and Crystal Palace, it's interesting that it's those two teams in particular, because this is where, as much as the media tries to frame the narrative around Arsenal going to Manchester City a few years ago and playing for a draw, quote unquote, and not being able to win at Anfield and whatnot, that hasn't cost Arsenal the Premier League title. It just hasn't. We actually have an excellent record against the so-called Big Six, if you include United and Spurs in that. We were undefeated until that late goal to Szoboszlai at Anfield. We've actually done really, really well in those head-to-head matches. In the last few seasons, we've been taking 4 points out of six off City and Liverpool. So it hasn't been, we haven't botched it there. It's these nagging fixtures, Fulham. Our points tally against them is, in comparison, it's quite poor, really, for a team contending for the Premier League title. Palace have caused Arsenal a lot of problems, losing at home to West Ham the last couple of seasons, losing away to Newcastle. This is where we've done so well to regain that advantage, to really claw back into that points tally. Corresponding fixtures last season, we took 0 points from West Ham at home and zero from Newcastle away. Fast forward to now, we're six. So we're already, just without even having to assess the other matches, we're already plus 6 points. And that's the difference. That's the Premier League title right there. It's in fixtures like this. We need to go to Fulham and we need to come back with the 3 points. That's where it's won or lost. It's not a disaster, what I'm trying to say. It's not a disaster if we draw, especially the Fulham match away. If we take a point, okay, it is what it is. However, the more and more of these sorts of matches that you drop or that you draw with, the greater scrutiny and pressure and intensity comes with those fixtures towards the end of the season. And as we know, as we saw last season, is that the margin of error gets tighter and tighter and tighter. When you go out there with that sense of, what's the right word I'm looking for? You've got that sense of knowing that you can't slip up, right? It can just stifle you. It can stifle the way you play. There's so much that goes into football without kicking a ball. The mentality, the approach, just the pressure that you're under, the internal conversations that are happening, that can really shape the frame of mind that you're in when you go out there to win. So banking these points, especially early now, especially with players to come back, I'm looking at this next 4 weeks as a really crucial time for Arsenal. And I'm quite positive about it. I'm quite comfortable. Look at I haven't even got to the Odegaard discussion yet about our options, because a year ago, it was almost season ending to lose Odegaard for as long as we did. And even though he came straight back into it and he did really well, I guess, overall, given the situation, to play as many minutes as he did, I maintain, and I've said this many, many times before on the channel, is that he wasn't fully fit. There quite likely would have been a lot of pain and inflammation that he needed to manage between matches. And with the fixture as unrelenting as it was, especially in January, there was very little time. It was just focused on recovery. And you don't really know what happens behind the scenes. You don't know. Are they just surviving on painkillers and that sort of stuff? I mean, there'll be so much more that happens behind the scenes that we're not really privy to. But I'll watch him close, even though his stats were still overall, you know, relatively decent in terms of distance covered. He leads our press. You know, he's doing the usual sort of sprints and the meters covered and all that sort of stuff. However, you just look at him in game states and you look at the power that he lost in his shooting, right? He just didn't strike me as someone who was fully fit. I think more so out of necessity, especially when we started to lose a number of players around him, the forwards, right? You don't need to name them all because we all know what I'm referring to. So we had no choice but to continue to persist with our captain. And I think that took a toll. So fast forward to now, what a beautiful array of options we have. I'm just going to bring up my other screen here. So Ezra, of course, Mikel Merino, he's such a unique footballer that, again, he's just hard to profile. He's not a six. He's not a DM, as some in the media would have you claim. He's a bit of everything. He's a bit of a centre forward. He's a half nine. He's a half ten. He can really do it all. I can see why Arteta finds a way to get him on the pitch, because the positions he finds himself in, the way he times his runs into the box, it's quite masterful. It's a skill in its own right. If he doesn't see the pass straight away, the way he zigzags his way through space, and all of a sudden he pops up and he shouldn't be free. He should be marked, but opposition players have a hard time handling him because, like, what actually is he? They're probably too busy, handling Gyökeres, the true number, the true centre forward. And all of a sudden, someone like Merino can just find space, and he's a finisher. This guy is clinical. Two more headed goals for Spain. He's in a rich vein of scoring form. I believe that's 8 goals in his last 6, and he's right up there in terms of I wish I remembered the specific stat. But aside from, I believe only Haaland is ahead of him in terms of goals in this qualifying campaign. At the World Cup qualifying campaign. I believe there's one other, sorry, it might be Memphis. But even to Merino to be in that list, even if he's in the top 3 or 4, he's a midfielder. It's phenomenal. Full credit to him. He's an absolute goal scoring machine. You've got to find a way to play him. And I would not be surprised if he starts at Fulham. I know that may not please everyone if we go again with Zubimendi, Merino, Rice. But maybe there's the option to put Ezra on the left, so you can still incorporate the two of them in terms of a starting lineup. But then again, when I start to talk about options again, I get a big smile on my face, because I look at the options for the left. You got Martinelli in goal scoring form, Trossard in goal scoring form, Saka in goal scoring form on the right. You know, we've got options everywhere. I don't think this will happen, by the way, full disclaimer. But there's even a case to be put forward that, does Merino come in as a centre forward just to sit Gyökeres down? It's probably not going to happen, so I won't spend too much time on this particular topic. But this is just around the options we have. Gyökeres is in a bit of a tough spot as well. I think Sweden are, in general, from what I've read, what I've seen, it's not the most cohesive relationship they've got with their national manager. And you look at the caliber of the players they've got and the matches that they're losing at this point in the qualifying campaign. Some real questions have to be asked about. I still think they'll find a way to qualify, because from what I understand, there's some Nations League coefficients involved that may give them another avenue to qualify for the World Cup. But with a front two of Gyökeres and Isak, right, to come out of these matches without winning, without scoring, it doesn't look great on them all. And look, if anyone could do with a goal, it's Gyökeres. I mean, I think I've been saying this for a few matches now. I think he's come on in a few moments as well. You know, just thinking, if you just bag one, you break that streak. I believe it's 10 games now in total for club and country that he hasn't scored. And that weighs on you, right? If you're a midfielder or a winger, I mean, these sorts of runs happen, right? It's part and parcel. But for an out-and-out centre forward, a goal-hungry striker like he is, and he's been quite accustomed to scoring a huge volume of goals, of course, that would weigh on him. And the longer and longer that streak continues, the more of a thing it can actually become. So if anyone needs a goal, it's him. Unfortunately for him, and it's been covered here before and by many others, with Havertz's injury, we haven't really had the opportunity to sit him down, even though there are other options in that position. Just, you know, Arteta's been reluctant to do so. And it's been a difficult integration for Gyökeres, because almost each and every time he's forming relationships out there with different wingers around him and even different midfielders behind him. I mean, he's hardly played much meaningful minutes with Odegaard. Odegaard's had 3 matches at home in the Premier League that he had to be subbed off around the half an hour mark. He started really well in the season, forming a relationship with Madueke in Saka's absence. And then Madueke, unfortunately, is injured. So Saka's come in. There's always chopping and changing the wing positions in the midfield. That makes it difficult. So I know this is sounding like a lot of excuses, and perhaps it is. I'd like to think it's more so just some context to apply, because his adaptation period. Well, this applies for anyone, by the way. Anyone coming into a new league, a new country, acclimatizing into Arsenal's system. Some very specific attributes that Arteta demands as well of certain positions. So all that in its own right. You know, it does take time. Sometimes we've seen players who it takes them a whole season to really understand what it is that is required from Arteta and the team. So Gyökeres is at a hard time. So having said that, having applied all of those, I guess, reasonings put forward, do I think he should have scored some more goals in some of the positions he's been in? Yes, absolutely. I would have loved to him not to slip at certain moments when he's been clear on goal, and I would have loved if he was able to reach that cutback from Rice that we saw when he was played in over the top on the left and cut it back. And, you know, just Gyökeres, if he had a bit more energy about him, if he played less minutes, he could have maybe sprinted and got his foot to that for the goal. So, yes, I think a number of things can be true at once. I would like to see him score more and do better with some of the chances he's been given. Having said that, there's a lot of context around it. So am I overly too worried? Well, no, because we're sitting on top of the Premier League and we've got goal scorers, we've got the spread of goal scorers in and around him to support him through it. So I do believe as the season goes on, as we get closer to Christmas, I believe we're going to start to see the true Victor Gyökeres, and especially in this Arsenal system. What I think he needs now, though, is just he just needs a good, solid run of stability with the players in and around him, knowing the relationships, and just going out there and doing his thing. And I'm confident that's going to happen. That's going to happen soon. So for a topic I said I wasn't going to spend too much time on, I actually ended up doing so, because I know there's been a lot of conversation in and around Gyökeres. And maybe it's just, look, it's been an international break. We need things to talk about, right? I mean, I've done the same in the last few recordings. I've been trying to pad out certain topics around the atmosphere at the Emirates and stadium redevelopments and sponsorship issues at Arsenal and whatnot. So maybe it's just one of those things. But if you rewind on the clock back to a month ago with the last international break, the narrative then that we sort of all focused on in between the matches was Arsenal's so-called handbrake and all that sort of stuff. So would I much rather be talking about this stuff than what we were prior? Absolutely yes, because Arsenal are in a good position, and I'm very keen to see that continue. So on to Fulham now. Just keep an eye on the time. So I want to wrap this up under half an hour. So on to Fulham. They're an excellent team. Obviously, I love Arsenal. I don't really follow other teams too much, but I've just got a bit of a soft spot for Fulham. I just like them. Obviously, there's an Arsenal flavour to them. Everyone from Leno, of course, to Iwobi, who I think Iwobi is a fantastic Premier League footballer, by the way. I mean, he's had an outstanding career. Full credit to him. He really has done so well for himself since leaving Arsenal. And I just like him. He just comes across as a very genuine, likable individual. I know he does a lot of advocacy work behind the scenes that I come across on YouTube, and I really, really like him. Of course, having said all this, I'm hoping he doesn't have a good game on the weekend. Same with Smith Rowe, who I'll always have a soft spot for. He and Saka, you know, in the early stages of Arteta's tenure, I'm always going to remember that. Best of luck to them all, aside from the weekend, of course. So I do like Fulham. They're just a very pesky opponent. There's some players such as Raul Jimenez. He always seems to do well. Whether is it when he was at Wolves, even against Arsenal, they always seem to be up for it. Every now and then you get a team that just, no matter where they are in on the table, you know, how their run of form is, when Arsenal was in town, they just seem to just step up. And look, that's just the nature of the randomness of football. You know, we've got to be ready for that. And I think we will be. I think we're in a really, really good position. In terms of lineup, the big question is Odegaard, right? As in, who steps in for Odegaard? That's the big question. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Marino. Arteta himself has said in the past that when a player is in that sort of goal-scoring form and international duty, you kind of find a way to accommodate them, to keep them going. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Marino start. Now, the question is, does he go with Rice and Zubimendi? Or is there an option to sit one of them down and have Eze and Marino in midfield. I like that option. I do. I don't think it's likely, though. If it was a home at the Emirates, then I think that's more likely. But in an away match like this, it's why I keep leaning towards that Marino option. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea and they want to see us, you know, unleash all the attackers. I totally understand that. I just don't think this is the match that he's going to do it. Maybe in some of these home fixtures that I mentioned before in the upcoming weeks, maybe that's a time to put Ethan in. Maybe it's a time to start, Ethan and Ezra, for example. In this match, it wouldn't surprise me at all when I wake up all bleary-eyed at 3:25 a.m. Sunday morning that I see Mikel Merino is starting. Elsewhere in the team, I think most of the team picks itself. I don't think this is a match where you're going to sit down Saka, for example. I think he starts. I think more so out of necessity, he needs to play. He's played 180 minutes on international duty, so you've got to keep an eye on that. But we've got impact off the bench. You know, one of Martinelli or Trossard, probably start on the left. Look, preferably, I would start Martinelli. I think he's fresher of the two, and plus Trossard as an impact sub. I mean, his stats speak for themselves. So I think most of the team, you know, we can kind of predict. However, even if it's just slight chopping and changing here and there, say Lewis Skelly starts instead of Calafiori, for example, we're okay. We're in a really, really good spot. None of this stuff gives me really any cause for concern or anything, because we've got the options. How well Arsenal have built this squad, and we built it with intention for moments like this to manage these sorts of periods of time. And as much as you don't look beyond the next match, of course, every player is going to say the next match is all they're focused on. You can't help but also look at the run of fixtures after Fulham, starting midweek with Atletico at home. And, you know, Arteta and the coaching staff, they would have some certain players earmarked for certain positions. Now, nothing's guaranteed, of course, because all it takes is an injury or a suspension or a knock on or an illness, and all those plans are sort of out the window and you have to readjust. But I imagine that we're going to see plenty of players come in and out in these next couple of weeks. And it doesn't have to be wholesale changes. I mean, Arteta's never really done it, right? Aside from a League Cup match when, you know, 9 or 10 changes can happen, he's never really fully rotated between a Champions League match and a Premier League match. And we don't need to. Three to four adjustments each time, and having the five subs available and utilizing them as the match goes on, it's fine. Whoever starts, whoever finishes, I'm very positive. I'm feeling very upbeat about where Arsenal are currently at, and I'm really, really keen to get stuck back in. Because this is just a great time to be an Arsenal fan. It really is. And yeah, I say that knowing full well that it could all go to crap in the next couple of weeks, and we'll be sitting here again questioning what's going on. But it's just a really good time to be an Arsenal fan, and I hope you're feeling that too. I just feel the club is just well positioned. And there's a genuine opportunity here this season to dream and dream big. But you know what? It's all about the next match. You still got to go out there and do your job. You can have all the options in the world. You can have all the players come back fit and healthy and scoring goals for their countries. And you still got to go out there. You still got to go out there to Fulham and win and bring home the 3 points, and then on to the next one. Bank it and move on. And I'm looking forward to that. So thank you so much for listening. As always, I genuinely appreciate everyone who sends me feedback or leaves a like or subscribe on YouTube or leaves me any comments to discuss. I truly, truly appreciate you all taking the time out of your day to listen. If you'd be kind enough, please, to consider, if you're listening on an audio platform, to leave me a review and follow the show. That would be fantastic. But otherwise, I'll be back on again over the weekend, hopefully talking about a resounding Arsenal win away to Fulham. Look after yourselves. Until then, check in with your loved ones, and I'll speak to you soon, and come on, Arsenal.